welcome to this week's edition of World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley coming at you from Washington, D.C. This program now being recorded on the afternoon of Friday, January 16th, 2015. We have many important developments, but let's go into one of the most important here right off the bat. The current world situation cries out for leadership, for people who know what to do, intellectual courage, moral courage, and all the rest. Physical courage comes in handy, too, from time to time. So we are sponsoring a seminar here in the Washington, D.C. area, just outside the district line, and that's going to be in Silver Spring, Maryland, starting a week from today already, a week from when I'm recording this, and that is to say on the 23rd of January at about 6 p.m., the registration will begin for my seminar in the political economy of the American system. This is an intensive weekend short course, an accelerator program, an econothon, according to some. And it's going to be a very, very intensive piece of work. It's about equivalent to what you'd have to do under most regimes to get three or four credits in a single weekend. So that's the idea. If you're going to come, you should certainly read Surviving the Cataclysm, Your Guide to the Worst Financial Crisis in Human History. It's probably a good idea to read Plato's Republic, especially Book 7 of Plato's Republic. And if you pre-register, which we're asking you to do, you must indeed pre-register, please send an email to Tax Wall Street Party, all together, nothing in between, at gmail.com. Tax Wall Street Party at gmail.com, and you'll get the full information. In other words, there'll be a pre-registration process, and then you'll find out everything you need to know about this. So it's going to be in Silver Spring, Maryland, starting at about 6 p.m. a week from today, 23rd of January, 2015. And here's the setting for this. We've had Belarus putting in capital controls and exchange controls, a 30% tax on flight capital. We've had Russia in the middle of December installing informal but quite effective capital controls and exchange controls. Just yesterday, we've had a tremendous earthquake, a tsunami in the international currency markets. The Swiss franc has been upvalued first by about 30%, and then it sort of leveled off at about 15% up compared to the euro. Next week, we're going to have the State of the Union on Tuesday, and that's going to be full of economic issues. Next week, we're also going to have the European Central Bank, Draghi, announcing what is I think a pretty desperate bid to stave off deflation in the form of quantitative easing for Europe. At least half a trillion euros will be thrown away, really, down the rat hole of toxic derivatives. And then in the middle of all that, you've got the Davos meeting, the Magic Mountain. The international financial elite goes to Davos next week. My proposal to you: don't go to Davos. You want to learn something about the world economy? Come to Silver Spring. Silver Spring, not Davos, next week. And by the way, how embarrassing for those Swiss finance oligarchs, among with everything else going wrong. The hotel that they built to cater to the Davos set, the Golden Egg Hotel, international luxury hotel for plutocrats, oligarchs, and parasites in Davos, has gone bankrupt, because they could only fill it during the Davos meeting. And then, of course, after that, on the 25th of January, the Greek vote. For the first time, an anti-austerity, anti-IMF, anti-ECB, anti-European commish regime, government in Europe. We'll hear something about their program in just a minute. And then after that, there'll even be the U.S. Federal Reserve on the 28th. So we are in the middle of a season of economic upheaval. You've got to know what to do. You've got to have a program. You've got to understand what economics are all about. That much we can do. Maybe we can do more. A lot of it depends on you. Most of it depends on you. But come. And I have to say, the seats, the places are limited and the places are filling up. So don't dither. Don't tergiversate anymore. Send an email to taxwallstreetparty@gmail.com and start making history, because that's the idea. This is the school for world historical individuals, school for world historical leaders. You want that? Come to us. We'll give you a better deal than just about anybody. Now, since we've mentioned the Swiss franc, here's what it was. The Swiss, of course, are a landlocked country in the middle of Europe, right? They're sandwiched in there between Germany, Italy, France, Austria, and the euro looms large. I was there in Switzerland some years back, and already then the complaint was that the shopkeepers on the Basel side couldn't make any money because their currency was so high. Everybody wanted to go over to the German side and buy in euros because the euros were cheaper. So that's the problem, that the euro has been, you know, pumped up, but the Swiss franc even more so. Swiss franc is an international haven, right? You put money there, you park it there, international hot money, you know, emergency reserves, stuff like this. So what this evolved to was a peg. We should call it a currency peg. It has been called a cap, but in practice it's a peg. And it simply meant that the peg was that a Swiss franc was going to be equal that the euro was going to be equal to 1.2 Swiss francs. And the idea was if it got to be more than that, if it got to be 1-to-1, or if the Swiss franc got ahead of the euro, then that was going to be terrible for Swiss export industries. What do they have? Precision optics, precision machinery, certainly watches, right? All kinds of watches from the very expensive down to the Swatches in the lower part of the market. And then you do have chocolate, you have tourism, you have a bunch of other stuff. But mainly it's banking. It is the Zurich Banking Center. They were the bank for Genoa. Just take a look at the map at a certain point, right? It was kind of a banking satellite of the Genoese, and of course Geneva, Zurich, all of these places, right, associated with banking. So the problem was now, as we've reported on this program, Mario Draghi, the Goldman Sachs alumnus who runs the European Central Bank, is planning, as I said, about half a trillion euros of quantitative easing. And that's a code word for buying up toxic, rotten, bankrupt derivatives and trying to support the banking system that way. We've had three rounds of quantitative easing here. Has not worked. A lot of money printed and thrown out the window. That same amount here, about $3 trillion here in the U.S., that could have gotten you a fairly decent recovery if you put all of that into infrastructure and related items. The U.S. would be a whole lot better off. But they don't understand that, these central bankers. They think they're there to serve the banks only, not the real economy, not the broader economy, just banks. So what it looked like then was next week, the gnomes of Zurich, as they're called, Zurich, the people at the Swiss Central Bank, which I think is maybe in Bern and Basel also, they were looking at a flooding of the market with euros, which they would have to start buying up to maintain this peg. They decided they didn't want to do it. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Okay, welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Send an email to taxwallstreetparty@gmail.com and express your desire to pre-register for the Silver Spring seminar starting 6 p.m. on the 23rd of January. That's the political economy of the American Revolution, American system, taught by me. And that's an intensive weekend course. You can find out all about it. Don't miss this opportunity. Seating is limited, so act now. The problem then was the Swiss did not want the Swiss franc to go too much above the euro, because this would then strangle the Swiss attempt to compete with Germany, Japan, and Austria and others in this area of precision optics, precision instruments, precision watches, all kinds of very high-level stuff. They would price themselves out of the market. So they said, we're going to set it at 1.2 as the relation between the two currencies, 1.2 Swiss francs to a euro. But that meant that you had to sell Swiss francs and buy euros, and they were accumulating a colossal amount of euros. And hot money was coming in order to shield itself from other dangers, right? It's a flight to quality. It's a safe haven play for these finance oligarchs. So if they had waited any longer, they would have been faced by the need to sell even more Swiss francs and buy even more euros. And they decided they didn't want to do that. So yesterday they terminated the peg. They removed the cap and they let the Swiss franc go up, up, up. And it went all the way up to 0.85 euros for one Swiss franc. That's quite a heavy devaluation or upvaluation in this case for the Swiss franc. So the point of that is it stabilized at a gain of about 15% for the Swiss franc compared to the euro. But still, this is probably the largest shift of any significant currency, right, apart from the smaller developing countries, probably since the collapse of the Smithsonian Accords about 1973-74. I would say it's the biggest currency earthquake in about 40 years. You could quibble about that, right? You could say, well, the Soros attack and destruction of the European rate mechanism in 1992 was similar. Maybe so. But you get the idea. It's something that's looming over many decades to get anything comparable. So that's a very big shift, right? We're not talking about, you know, the price of electronics online. This is a currency, right? And it's one of the more important ones. So the peg is now finished. The cap is gone. And look at this. What it's done is I'm sure, to create huge derivatives losses in many a zombie bank and hedge fund hyena operation across the world. So far, we've only seen the tip of the iceberg, the real losses as a result of what the Swiss have done, and it was done with a certain amount of surprise, I think, probably caused a tremendous amount of damage because of the fact that the world economy is now so full of derivatives and so many hedge fund hyenas and zombie bankers use these derivatives, right? They got bets in all directions. So it means that any dislocation, any shock is multiplied. That's why derivatives have got to be banned and taxed, according to which derivatives we're talking about. So, here's what it has now led to. A number of currency trading brokerages have gone, belly up. First of all, there's something called Excel Markets in New Zealand. That has simply gone bankrupt. One of the problems is that these are brokerages in some cases that do retail investing for little people. Little people get into this and lose their shirts. But if the little person is wiped out, then the Excel Markets have to make good the losses. So they can't either, so they're also gone. There's a similar company in Great Britain, Alpari, A-L-P-A-R-I, in Great Britain. They're also gone. Same story. And the one in the U.S. that's attracted most attention is FXCM. FXCM, currency brokerage. They have lost almost 90% of their stock value today in one day, the 16th of January. And by losing 90%, they're either going to go bankrupt or more likely be taken over by another currency firm, the Jefferies company. John Hancock Absolute Return Currency Fund, run by First Quadrant and sold through the John Hancock sales network of insurance agents and so forth, that has been hit very hard. It lost about 9% of its stock value today. Citibank admits losing $200 million on this. I would have to guess it's more. Think of the London Whale, right? Imagine the London Whale. Compare the first announcement of losses to the subsequent announcements of losses, and you'll see that they don't get smaller. They get bigger. So lots of Swiss companies, again, the Swatch watches are complaining that this is a tsunami. And in Poland, Poland primarily, but also Hungary, Croatia, and some others, Eastern Europe, there are people who have bought mortgages denominated in Swiss francs because the interest rates were low, but there was this currency risk. And now people in Poland who have Swiss franc denominated mortgages are going to get skinned alive, because if it was 30 billion of mortgages in Poland in terms of the Polish zloty, it's going to be what, 34 billion in zlotys or whatever it is, as a result of this up valuing. And of course the Swiss stock market in chaos, and so forth. So this is a very ugly scene. Along with this, on the same day, India carried out a rate cut. So the Reserve Bank of India has lowered the interest rate it charges banks by 0.25% to 7.75%. That is the first rate reduction in nearly 2 years in India. Switzerland has also gone to more negative interest rates. What, you want to park your money in the Swiss bonds, for example? Well, that will cost you minus 1.25% per year, up from, I think, 0.25. So another whole percentage point that they're going to carve out of the amount that you deposit there. That's a huge dislocation. But we can sum up this Swiss franc story in the following way. World deflation has kicked in. The falling oil price. Oil got down to about $44 this week. The European Central Bank is afraid of deflation, as they well might be. Of course, their response is imbecilic. The quantitative easing of Draghi. What you need to do in Europe is the same as anywhere else. You got to open up a credit stimulus window at the European Central Bank. This is the fundamental demand. Harness the credit creation power of the European Central Bank. Credit stimulus window, let's say about 6 or 7 trillion euros, and start rebuilding the entire infrastructure of the European continent. Superhighways, railroads, roads, energy production, schools, hospitals, public buildings, the works. The full Works Progress Administration, Harry Hopkins, WPA, PWA, CCC, TVA, Tennessee Valley Authority, the entire thing. That would generate plenty of demand, and you'd be way away from any problem of deflation. Instead, they insist on doing it through the zombie bankers and through the rotten derivatives. That won't work. But in the course of doing that, they're trying to drive down the price of the euro, because the euro is indeed too high. Strangles even German exports, struggle as a result of the euro being so high. And as the European Central Bank attempts to drive down the euro, the Swiss say, well, we don't want to have to maintain ourselves at this point, right? And therefore, they've got to break away, right? Cut loose from the euro. That's what they've done. The Swiss franc went way up, and that's then the response. And remember, I'll say it again, Where is the new long-term capital management? Where is the new explosive bankruptcy in the system? We don't know. Belarus, Russia, now Switzerland, different countries taking their turn in the barrel, getting slammed, so forth. The foreign exchange market is about $5 trillion a day. It's hard to move it, but this one did. And, of course, remember that the Swiss authorities, the ruling class, don't fundamentally care about chocolate or tourism. They only care about the big zombie banks of the Bahnhofstrasse in Zurich or the Banque Privée, right, the various Banque Privée of Geneva and so forth. So that's was in action. It has been compared to Soros's attack on the British pound as part of the old European rate mechanism. Now, where does it go from here? They're all talking about Denmark. Why Denmark? Denmark is another currency which is linked, pegged to the euro. And there's going to be a speculative attack on the Danish crown, kronor, next week as a result of this, because they have an informal peg vis-a-vis the euro. And then this, Wall Street Journal of today, Friday the 16th, Swiss reversal will focus minds at Denmark's central bank, which is already considering how to respond to an eventual ECB asset buying program. In other words, what Draghi will announce at the middle of next week. Now, also, we've got to look at the hysteria of the Anglo-Americans, right? The Anglo-Americans are really whining and screaming as a result of this. Let's just take the editorial of the Wall Street Journal. Murder in Zurich. Murder? Come on. It's a free market, right? Or let them do what they want. This won't be the last currency shock as the world's big central banks go their own way in frantic attempts to spur a slowing global economy. So there's a danger of deflation. Deflation is coming. It's here. Certainly came to Switzerland with a vengeance. And of course, the people who have money don't like that because they want their money to be worth more, not less. So they don't want to stop deflation. They'd love deflation. That's the Ron Paul, Rand Paul libertarian program. The Swiss Royal World Markets. It's not R-O-Y-A-L, but R-O-I-L. The Swiss Royal World Markets by killing their currency peg. Man, the Anglo-Americans are really, rubbed raw by this, right? The headline, Swiss Move Royals Global Markets. Central Bank Surprise Action Wreaks Havoc in Currency Trading, Signals Perilous Times for Policymakers. Switzerland Central Bank triggered turmoil in the markets when it scrapped its cap, a move that unleashed new volatility among bonds and currencies around the world and further underscored growing concerns about global economic prospects. Unusual financial conditions threaten the world's already fragile economy. Ooh, it increases the Klieg lights on the ECB action next Thursday, sets investors up for disappointment. What I have to conclude from this is that there was some action planned. The Anglo-Americans had set their own trap. I can't give you any details. You help me find out. The Anglo-Americans had set up some scheme by which they were going to try to wreck the Swiss franc and or wreck the link, the peg, and or wreck the euro. In other words, there was something going on where the Anglo-Americans were trying to beat Draghi to the draw, because this is now the game of vultures, right? This is the hyenas tearing each other apart. And I think there's something with it. And whatever it was is now going to be lifted and shifted against the Danish crown. So there we go. Approximately 35 billion Swiss francs of hot money went into the Swiss coffers in the month of December. Imagine that, 34.2 billion, we're told. There's also complaints that there was insider trading that in the minute before the announcement, a guy from Crédit Agricole is on TV saying that some people knew in advance and positioned themselves even better. Okay. Now, the other big story of the week, and that's the Charlie Hebdo. I'm not going to give you the full rundown on Charlie Hebdo and this French terrorism. We just had, I did a on the same day, au jour le jour, I did a rundown on that, which you can find at tarpley.net. This is a lengthy radio interview. You can hear it where I go through it. Let's just add what we have. It is continuing in the sense the turmoil and the agitation in France, Germany, Netherlands, and Belgium, in particular the town of Verviers, V-E-R-V-I-E-R-S, Verviers. It's amazing to hear how few American or British, even worse, TV correspondents have any idea of the pronunciation of French. But there it is. We're told that there are 20 sleeper cells with 180 patsies ready to act, that there was a sleeper cell in Verviers with three or four patsies ready to go. Two of them are now dead, one wounded but captured. Now, we're also getting a lot of stuff about this Coulibaly network, or was it Cannibaly? Coulibaly is the one who says that he was working for ISIS, and there is some idea that the people that are getting rounded up now, these patsies, are somehow connected to Coulibaly rather more than the Guashi brothers. However, the Guashi brothers have the imprimatur of Aulaki, the CIA lackey. And anybody who says they were recruited or inspired by Aulaki, the CIA lackey, are, in turn, likely to be double agents working for the CIA. And there's an attempt to somehow set up a rivalry between AQAP in Yemen and the ISIS. That is an ape theater, as we'll get back to in a minute. For the January, as we're taping. Remember, very little time left to send an email to taxwallstreetparty@gmail.com and say that you want to pre-register for this upcoming seminar. I hope a great intellectual event, because others will be contributing too. That's going to be in Silver Spring, Maryland, starting on the 23rd of January, this coming Friday at 6 p.m. taxwallstreetparty@gmail.com. And world historical status can be yours. How's that for an offer? Now, as we were saying, Aulaki, the CIA lackey, is just that. He's the CIA lackey. People he recruits become CIA double agents. And, of course, he's been killed, at least so we're told, 4 years ago. But his incendiary tapes live on. So this is a kind of a crescendo. You have to ask yourself why. Well, the why is sort of what I was saying here at the beginning. The entire financial system and world strategic situation, I think, is tending to get out of the hands of the Anglo-American zombie bankers, Wall Street, City of London, and so forth, when we have things like Belarus taxing flight capital, Russia breaking the rules and putting in informal exchange controls and capital controls. The Swiss somehow have stunned the Anglo-Americans. There's more to this, right? What the Swiss have done, the hysteria, the rage of the Anglo-Americans, it's not just a currency revaluation. The State of the Union, things will be going on there. Draghi, will it work, right? The QE that he's coming up with. The Greek vote, that's a big one, right? That's a direct political challenge. That's what they fear most, and so forth. And then this constant, what can we say, the water torture, right? Radio Shack is going to be bankrupt. The principal casinos of Atlantic City are bankrupt. Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas is bankrupt. These are strange straws in the wind. So there it is. In particular, I think the people behind these terror attacks, in other words, terrorist controllers, right, the people who steer the moles, the patsies, and the technicians, they want to put a chill on political activity, political protest. One example. Out of the state of Ohio, we're getting a parade of psychotic patsies, FBI patsies, people who have been quite obviously worked on, duped, manipulated by fast-talking FBI double agents, right, entrapment agents. And the idea is that out of Ohio, we're getting this parade of patsies who are all angry at the Republicans, angry at Boehner, angry at the reactionaries who run the House of Representatives and now indeed the Senate. So we have Boehner's bartender, right? Bartender Mike, who calls Boehner's wife and says that he was the bartender and that he had had plenty of time, plenty of opportunities to administer a Mickey Finn to Boehner, and he wished he had, but now he was going to come and attack him otherwise, right? So in other words, a completely mentally impaired, psychotic individual. So that's one, and then they round him up. And then the second one is this other guy, another character. This one has converted, he says, to Islam. He's a supporter of ISIS, and he's also in his case, you can see very clearly the FBI provocateur who writes all this stuff down. It's aspirational. It's aspirational in the sense that he's nowhere near being able to do it, but he shoots his mouth off and that's enough. So now we have these two cases, right? We have bartender Mike and we have this other guy who converted to Islam, both of these Ohio patsies. What's the result of that? Suppose you want to go and have a demonstration, down with Boehner, down with the Republicans, and watch out for Congress. Aren't you chilled? Yeah, I think you're chilled. So I think that's what it is. And that's the general idea of this entire terror spree is to do that in regard to Syriza and Alexis Tsipras winning the Greek election. And the point of that is when Syriza wins, I know, of course, Goldman Sachs says that Samaras, the reactionary austerity ghoul of the IMF, they say he's going to win. Well, maybe not, probably not. We think Syriza is going to win. We want you to go out and vote for Syriza, by all means. Any person of goodwill, help them any way you can, with your vote, with your money, with publicity, anything you can do, do it. And when that happens, there's quite likely to be a labor upsurge in Europe. In other words, the long-suffering European labor movement, the unions in Europe, which are, at least on paper, still formidable organizations, they might now say, okay, enough is enough. If the Greeks can do it, we can do it too. So the idea is that what you're doing is chilling that response in advance, right? You're trying to suppress a mass strike upsurge before it happens. Now, let's also just go back. The principal reasons for the Charlie Hebdo. It is the interview given by Hollande to France Inter, the 2 days before, that is to say on Monday, January 5th, Hollande had proclaimed to France Inter that he had been in contact with Putin, that he had talked to Putin about the status of Crimea and Ukraine, that Putin is not going to annex the eastern Ukrainian cities, Donetsk, Lugansk, and these areas. That is not Putin's goal, he says Hollande. The goal of Putin is simply to be important and to prevent these areas from becoming part of NATO because they're too close for comfort. And the most important single statement, Hollande says, the sanctions against Russia must end. If Russia is willing to show signs of progress, the sanctions must end. He also says he does not want to invade Libya. There's a group around General Puga, P-U-G-A, in the French General Staff. They do want to invade Libya. And the aircraft carrier Charles de Gaulle is now steaming, we hope, towards the eastern Mediterranean, not towards the Gulf of Sidra and Libya. No, not there. Go and have a go at ISIS. That's fine, but not Libya. Not at this point, anyway. And then there was this question about Greece, right, where Merkel and Samaras had been on a hysteria line. Big scare. Propaganda of fear. Fear campaign against Syriza. If you vote for them, it'll be chaos. It'll be the end of the world. And Hollande says, well, the Greeks should vote for who they want, and we hope they'll maintain their international obligations. The result of this is that it has succeeded. They were supposed to be at Astana in Kazakhstan on the 15th, yesterday, by the calendar. There was supposed to be a summit with Hollande, with Merkel, with Putin, and with Poroshenko of Ukraine. And that has not happened, to the best of my knowledge anyway. There has been no summit of Astana. The fact that there wouldn't be one was announced by Merkel on that Sunday, right? The same day with that procession and all the stuff about that. Merkel was there and she apparently extracted from Hollande the idea that the conditions were not ripe to have that meeting. That meeting was going to be, I think, a turning point against the sanctions regime. In other words, a repudiation of Kerry and Obama and their sanctions against Russia. But the meeting has not happened. So it's a success. Now, remember, this is geopolitical terrorism. I'm afraid I have to advance my contention that I very well may be the world's leading expert in this matter, right? Going from the Morrow case of 1978 down through 9/11 synthetic terror made in USA down to the present day. Geopolitical terrorism is how NATO disciplines its alliance. Remember General de Gaulle? He bucked NATO, 30 assassination attempts. Aldo Moro was going to detach Italy from the Western Bloc, or indeed overcome the division into blocs. Kidnapped and murdered, 1978. Even this Breivik affair. The Breivik affair had to do with the bombing of Libya. Norway was going to drop out. If Norway dropped out, Holland was going to drop out. So Breivik kills the sons and daughters of the ruling party. And now Hollande. Hollande says on Monday the sanctions must end, and Wednesday Paris explodes into terrorism, and it's still going on. And whenever you see things in Belgium, Netherlands, elsewhere, the smaller NATO states are being disciplined. Back in it. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, our second hour here. And we want to keep up with events in Greece. All eyes, the entire attention of the world will increasingly be fixed on Greece as we go towards the elections, parliamentary elections on, I guess it's Sunday, the 25th of January. Now, we got a very good report from Michael Chiotinis in Athens last week. I just want to remind people how important this was. He told us very interesting stuff about the Syriza program, talking about free electricity and free food and other benefits for about 300,000 extremely poor families. That is, in reality, now it's a centerpiece of the Pact of Salonika, which is the election program that Syriza is running at. And Michael also warned us against the insidious manipulations of this guy Stavros Theodorakis. And Stavros is the head of this party called The River, or Topotami. He says he calls it The River because his program is so clear and limpid. In reality, as soon as I finished this interesting interview last week, I looked at Bloomberg, and there's Bloomberg News, right? Wall Street in person, saying the kingmaker in the election is going to be Stavros Theodorakis. So ahead of the news here with the help of Michael Chiotinis. So, Michael, welcome. What's happening? Tell us how you see it.
Hello, Webster. Thank you for having me. Well, the thing is about the river, this river, I'm warning against it since the first time that he appeared on the public arena, really. He presented this party, the river, alone, just himself. He very much reminded me of Mussolini, really. I'm sorry.
No, you're right. Absolutely.
And I was thinking that the river is like the March on Rome. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
He tries to give it the sense of a mass movement, something from down up, which really isn't. It's just a manipulation, political manipulation, just to keep the old regime going. Now, let me give you some background about the economic situation in Greece. You probably heard about 27% unemployment and 65% youth unemployment. Well, those figures are an underestimation. Real unemployment, I think is about 35%, because, you know, they don't count unemployment as it seems, doesn't count people discouraged. They don't count people working for one day each week. They don't count for, people who work in a completely different line of work than what their real skills are. So real unemployment also, a very big percentage of people working are working on the minimum wage. Let me tell you, if you don't believe me, there's some crazy things happening, and I know they might sound a bit far-fetched, but they really aren't. Craziness, ruthlessness has been ruling for the last 5 years in Greece. Now, the thing is, besides the economic situation, the unemployment, we have certainly the most important problem is the demographic crisis. We have population actually decreasing. We're talking now about a Western developed or formally developed anyway economy, Western economy, with 11 million people population, and in spite of immigration coming in, population is actually decreasing, because we have no births. Births have fallen about 50%. That's very sad. People are not allowed, actually. They're not able to form families, to create, to raise children, to have children. They don't dare have children. And we have immigration going out, actually. We have highly educated Greeks migrating to other European countries and the U.S., my figures is 150,000 highly educated people to 150 to 200,000 Greeks. We're talking about 11 million population. Now let's talk a little about the Salonika program, the program Syriza is running on. Now, I'm telling you, it's really modest, to say the least. It's actually a very small, really half measures. But the thing is that in such crises, half measures are certainly a start, but they are enough certainly to cause a hysteria by the system, by the the regime ruling Greece. Now, let's see here about, let's see here the program. So, first of all, we have intention with dealing with the humanitarian crisis in Greece. There's they talk about free electricity for 300,000 households. Also food stamps for the first time in Greece. We never had [S2] Right. [S1] Food stamps as a social measure. Also, again, for 300,000 households. We have a small pension increase for very small pensions, and especially for people who are disabled, which is very important. And we're talking about only 150,000 pensions, disabled pensions, something like this. We are talking about rent subsidy to help 30,000 homeless families to get back in an actual home. We're talking about free healthcare for the unemployed and also medicine, free public transportation for unemployed and people under the poverty line, We're talking about a tax cut on diesel consumption, heating diesel, actually, for people who use diesel as a for heating their homes. And let me say here, we had a case of, because people are unable to buy heating diesel, we had a sad case of students dying from carbon monoxide poisoning because they, people all over the country are trying to burn anything they can have, that they can get their hands on to heat their homes. Now, the second big group of measures is concerns restarting the economy. Now, let us see a little bit about this, what Syriza is saying on this. We see here putting an end to legal prosecutions and things like bank account confiscations, salary confiscations for debtors, for people who have huge debts to the government.
Hang on, Michael. We'll discuss this in the second segment. Hang on. Stay on the line. We'll be right back on World Crisis Radio with the Salonika Compact. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. We're getting a rundown from Michael Giotinis in Athens as we go towards this landmark Greek vote on the 25th of January, the Salonika Compact, the Salonika program of the Syriza election formation. First pillar is the humanitarian crisis. The second one we're just going through is protecting the economy so you can't be, you know, thrown out on the street for tax problems. I believe they've got the first 12,000 euros are going to be tax-free. That's essentially the reform of the tax system from the bottom up that we here have also demanded. And I think you've also got, if you've got a house, your primary residence will be not taxed. You won't have to pay these huge real estate taxes. So, Michael, please please take it from there.
We have to say here that people these years, these past years, couldn't pay their taxes or debts to the government were actually stopped by being able to do business. And what Syriza is saying is that they should be able to do business. They should be able to come to an agreement about how they're going to pay, and then they can restart doing business, they start the economic activity, you know, producing, providing services, hiring people.
Right.
Now, someone might ask, What's so brilliant about that? I mean, you think that the IMF-imposed regime didn't want economic activity to occur? Well, it's actually not a matter of brilliance, as I see it. It's actually a matter of intentions. And what are the intentions of a government? And the intention was, actually, in my opinion, to confiscate wealth. It wasn't a case of creating economic activity through this IMF regime. It was actually wealth confiscation. And I don't know what they were going to do with all this real estate, and maybe securitize it, sell it abroad.
I think Steve Forbes wanted to come and buy the Parthenon, didn't he?
Anyway, yes, but we're talking about private property here. Okay,
right.
There's a whole program of selling public assets, but we're talking here about private property being confiscated for debts, and I don't know what, securitize it, sell it as collateral for liquidity. I have no idea. God knows what derivatives. I don't know. But people weren't allowed to do business with this regime. And that's, I think, interesting.
Maybe we can compare this to debtor's prison, right? In Britain and so forth, if you had a certain amount of debt, you could be put in prison, right? I think Nicholas Nickleby by Charles Dickens is a story about people who are in debtor's prison or on the edge. The American state of Georgia was founded by this guy, Oliver Oglethorpe, mainly to say you can't be put in jail for owing money. You can, you got to be out there so you can work it off. Sounds similar.
Yes, or peonage for
peonage.
The best scenario is peonage. The worst, of course, is prison. Actually, they stopped this prison imprisonment. They did have imprisonment for debtors for I don't know €1,000 or something.
Sure.
And at least they stopped that. Anyway, we see here also inside the program they're running on, series is running on, 12-month seizing of all legal measures against debtors, and we're talking here about debtors with demonstrably zero income,
right,
who are being legally prosecuted. We're seeing here restoring the minimum wage to what it was 3 years ago.
And how much is that?
It's around €780, around €800 per month. Yes. Restoring what you said before, the tax-free income level to what it was. You know, they were taxing people below the poverty line here in Greece, €6,000 annually. You had an annual income of €6,000 being taxed, actually, with an income tax, if you don't believe me. They're talking about a debt jubilee or a debt freeze for so-called red loans. You call a loan or a mortgage red. You say it's red when the debtor is behind in payments, at least 3 months or 4 months. I don't know exactly.
In arrears. People that are in arrears if there's several payments behind.
Yes. They call it red loans. And
red.
God forbid for banks to have red loans on their balance sheets. They're talking about a development bank. That's interesting.
Right.
Special purpose banking institutions for small businesses and farmers, run by the government, of course. We should say here that the whole banking system, Greek banking system, is actually owned by the government because of bailout money, because of the debt restructure that took place 3 years ago, the so-called PSI, the great haircut, which is the only haircut in the history of economic of humanity, with which they striked inside holders of Greek debt, Greek sovereign debt, more than the outside. I don't think it's ever been done. And the banks went bankrupt because of this. And they now are owned by the government, but run by bankers. They're not. The government is not allowed to intervene in the management of the banks. That's a bit strange. So they call about. They're talking about, of course, taking control of the banks, because they are publicly owned, de facto. And they're talking about using bank bailout money set aside but not used. And they say we'll use that for our program. Also, they're talking about things like
taxation. Michael, I'm sorry, I guess we're out of time. That's a good update. We're going to see you after our next election. Thank you very much. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Now, we just had yesterday on the 15th of January, there was supposed to be the sentencing of Reverend Edward Pinckney in the Berrien County Courthouse in St. Joseph, Michigan. But in what I think shows the weakness of the prosecution, they have not proceeded to the sentencing. So that is all delayed. And instead, they're taking their wrath out on Reverend Pinckney by sending him to a prison many hours away in some godforsaken part of the state as a kind of harassment or punishment in that regard. But there's also been very important publicity on Russia Today Network and elsewhere. But let's get the rundown direct from the person who has been doing so much of it, and that's Daniela Walls, the chairwoman of the Tax Wall Street Party. Welcome, Daniela.
Hi, Webster. Yeah, we're calling that new prison the Siberia of Michigan. Everybody is waiting on word about what happened on January 15th in the proposed trial. Judge Chirac was reassigned during the new year to the civil docket from the criminal docket. The hearing was preliminarily set, but due to Judge Chirac's civil calendar, Reverend Pinckney's hearing was taken off the docket, and it hasn't been reset. Our best guess is that it will be pushed to February. This is likely due to Judge Chirac's reassignment to the civil docket. I would like to express my sincere disappointment that the Reverend has to continue to wait to have this hearing, to continue to wait and rot in prison while the courts can decide to get them on their calendar. One of the motions that we filed that has yet to be heard at this hearing, the one that was supposed to take place on the 15th, that we are now waiting on, is to get him out of prison on bail pending appeal. He cannot be out on bail until they give us this hearing. We got communication late last night from Reverend Pinckney's legal counsel. We were told that the hearing was preliminarily set, but that it was taken, like I said, off the docket because Judge Chirac was transferred beginning in the new year. Reverend Pinckney's legal counsel believes that the hearing had to be canceled because of Judge Chirac having to manage this new civil docket. Reverend Pinckney's lawyer believes that the hearing will now take place sometime in February. So that's our answer. That's what we're waiting for. I will be providing weekly updates so that the audience knows exactly as much as his central legal team knows. Again, I am extremely disappointed that Reverend Pinckney has to continue to sit in prison and that he didn't get his day in court on the 15th. So now he'll have to sit in prison another month at least until we can get our day in court. Now, I need each audience member to help. This is your American fight. Please continue to write to Judge Chirac at the courthouse. I cannot stress how important it is from our point of view, from this central legal team. These letters they are having an effect. You will find a sample letter from a lawyer at freepinckney.wordpress.com. That's the go-to site besides BH Banco. So freepinckney.wordpress.com. Paraphrase this letter. Do not copy it like we said. Do not mimic it word for word. It is just there to inform your arguments to the judge while staying within a legal framework. He is likely to take the letter more seriously if you make legal arguments rather than emotional arguments. The address for the courthouse is above the sample letter at freepinckney.wordpress.com. I have gotten word that activists are writing to Judge Chirac's home. Do not do this. Writing to the judge's home hurts us at this point for many legal reasons more than it helps. Please do not do this. Also, I've gotten word that activists are sending many letters that are anonymous, meaning they don't have their name and address. This also harms us more than it helps. It is your duty as an American to publicly scrutinize a judge. If you are afraid and believe that you need to send your letter anonymously, then you need to know your rights and duties as a citizen, which one of them is to publicly scrutinize a judge's conduct. Please sign your name and address to the letters in the exact format that's provided on the sample letter. There's an exact way to write this. That's the part you can mimic. Do that exactly. If you are not willing to put your name and address on the letters, please just don't even send one at all. You mentioned some things already. I wrote down a couple bullet points to cover, which is one is that Abby Martin on RT covered Pinckney's case. So thanks to your contacts, Webster, you did this, getting in touch with her, your friends getting in touch with her personally and making this happen. Thank you so much, Webster. Also, people's tweets.
We should also give credit to all the people who have been using the social media and agitating, and the people who have written articles about this, as a Kiwi, and on Truth Out there was an article. So it's a cumulative effort.
It's definitely a cumulated effort. Her her publicity or her team, when they called, said that this case is all over the place. So that was really good. So Al Jazeera just made contact with our central team this morning, Larry and myself, and they want to begin to cover the case. And they found out about it through RT. So here we go. Big important point. Pinckney was moved, instead of having his day in court, which he was excited about yesterday, to add insult to injury. It is Berrien County and Judge Sharrock are engaging in petty harassment, like you said, late on the evening of the 14th, before what he thought was going to be his day in court. They moved Reverend Pinckney an additional 6 hours away to that prison that we said in the very beginning was the Siberia, on the northern Michigan border. I don't have that address in front of me. I just got it late last night. It's on a scrap of paper. But I will put the new address for the new prison and all info on the homepage, again, at freepinckney.wordpress.com. The address for the new prison will be on that homepage. The reason I heard for moving him was that he was, quote, getting too much mail and media attention. So this is a transfer intended to disorient the media and disorient activists and disorient you. Don't let this happen. Keep up the exact amount of mail and pressure that you were sending to the old prison. Intensify it and send it to the new one. Let them know that there's nothing they can do to stop this. So they wanted to stall the activism by creating an invalid mailing address. Reverend Pinckney emotionally said the other night, "What about my mail?" It was very sad. "They won't give me my mail." And mail is the one thing that he looks forward to during the day. So this was, more than anything, very upsetting for him. Meaning mail that arrives to the old prison address that he was there from a couple days ago that is in transit will not reach him. So the prison told me very nastily, we're not an answering service. We're not a forwarding mail service. We're not the post office, they said to me. So it's, you know, brutish behavior. So if your mail is en route, then if you could, and when you get the new address, resend what you had sent. If you are media, then please get this new phone number and address again at freepinckney.wordpress.com. BH Banco has a current goal of raising $20,000 as soon as possible. This will cover the $6,000 court transcript, which we need to have and we are going to have to pay for. We need these funds for the appeal lawyers. The appeal lawyers can't do anything without that transcript because they need to read what was said word for word during the original trial. We need this money to post bond if they decide that he can be released in February pending appeal and for the appeal process itself. So I must stress the importance of donations to bhbanco.org. And that is my Pinckney report. I want to transition into your class, Webster.
Just a couple of things, Daniela. Yeah. You're too modest. You were on with Larry Pinckney on the Power Hour of Joyce Riley. You got kind of a live coverage on that morning. We also had demonstrations. There was a demonstration at the Berrien County Courthouse in St. Joseph. There was one at the office of Representative Upton in Benton Harbor, in Kalamazoo, and in Lansing, Russia Today. We'll be back in just a second. Stay with us, Daniela. We'll wrap up in the first few minutes here. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Little time left, so let's try to move it along. I would also point out, I was able to finally finish a letter to Judge Schrock, where we point out that whatever comes out of this is going to be scrutinized by the United Nations Human Rights Council, by the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe in Vienna, and by the Organization of American States here in Washington, D.C., and we're going to carry those things out. So there's not going to be a star chamber proceeding that covers it all under anonymity. So there has been a very significant international mobilization. So, Daniela, I can give you 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. We had protests from Kalamazoo to Benton Harbor, but Unfortunately, when the activists got there in Benton Harbor, they found the courthouse locked, the area where Judge Schrock was, and they were confused. And we had no word that they were going to cancel the date of the 15th. So we are mobilized to continue these protests. I wanted to transition to your class really quickly and give some important information. Okay, so this is going to be coming up very soon. It's on Friday, January 23rd, and goes until the 25th. Following the class, we're going to celebrate the wrap-up with a wrap-up party at our D.C. locals' house, watching the election results come in for the Greek elections, where hopefully the Syriza party will take power. This is going to be a fun, fortuitous blend that we'll have, have at the end of an intensive weekend course. Let's see. Participation is limited. Seating is limited. And the class is next weekend, so I need you guys to get into gear. If you're planning on attending, you must pre-register with the Tax Wall Street Party at taxwallstreetparty@gmail.com. Somebody from the party will give you the address and expedite the process of attending with you. Please include your telephone number. We need your telephone number and email when registering so I can talk to you and we can expedite the process. The most important thing we need is your phone number. And I want to say quickly, this class is serious, not for the idly curious. This is for people who want to make a difference and become serious world historical leaders and offer an alternative to the current ruling class. It's going to be 16 hours intensive immersion, and at the end we're going to have a lot of fun. We need to pay for this space where the class is being held. In the last episode, I asked for party dues. We need all people of goodwill to start their $20 recurring party dues. The suggested amount, like I said, is $20. You can do that in the top left corner at taxwallstreetparty.org. We need to pay for the venue. This will cover all the intelligence that comes from you, like I said in the last episode, and the action that comes from us. There are so many fees that we need to pay for. Instead of scrambling last minute, we need dues. This way we can give more. So top left-hand corner, hit the recurring payment button when you put in $20, and this is a great investment. The Swiss franc went up 15% in a single day, heralding world economic depression. This is the year for economics. The Tax Wall Street Party is leading the charge here in America, and we need you to help fund this effort. We need you to come to class, and that's what I got for today. So I will talk to you soon, Webster.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much, and we'll be back next week. We will have a broadcast next week. We might record it a little bit earlier. Let's see how we do it. Okay, thank you, Daniela. Now, let me just wrap up. The Tax Wall Street Party makes history. I already discussed the growing influence, I would even say hegemony, of my analysis on this false flag stuff with the patsies, the Charlie Hebdo, above all, the why. It's not enough to go around with cliches, right? In particular, a lot of very lazy people who, as soon as something happens, they blame it on whoever their favorite target is, right? Some of them will say, well, the Israelis obviously did that or whatever it is. In this case, if you simply repeat the cliches, you're going to be wrong, because the question is Hollande rebelling against the NATO discipline. But now let's look at the other ones. The big interesting one is we've been campaigning for the Wall Street sales tax. We got it on CNN the weekend before Obama's inauguration. Our candidates in New York City mayoral races in 2013, Wall Street sales tax. Candidates in Nebraska, in New York State, in the Bay Area of San Francisco, Wall Street sales tax, Wall Street sales tax. Lo and behold, Congressman Van Hollen, coming forward, Chris Van Hollen, Democrat of Maryland. He was my congressman here until about 2 years ago when the gerrymander went through. But he's talking about a Wall Street sales tax. This is huge news. Wall Street sales tax proposed by essentially Van Hollen and Pelosi. It's obviously not exactly what I want, but here's what it is. 0.1% fee on stock trades. It's already in reality, in the European Union, the Washington Post doesn't realize that this is not a consideration. In Italy and other countries, The government is taking in billions of dollars of revenue as a result of the Eurotobin, the European version of the Wall Street sales tax. So 0.1% on all stock trades. You know what we would say to that, of course. We want 1%, and we want stocks and derivatives, as well as corporate and other private bonds. Junk bonds, absolutely, 1%. So according to the Washington Post coverage, and I think they're getting it off Van Hollen's handout, $80 billion per year. Think what you can do with $80 billion. The entire program that Michael Chiotinas was just talking about is about $12 billion to save the life of the Greek working class and the Greek population, $12 billion. Here we'd be getting $80 billion, according to these estimates, out of a Wall Street sales tax. They also want to do the following. Increase the child tax credit from $3,000 to $8,000, $16,000 per couple. That's a step in the right direction. Saver's bonus, a kind of a premium if you put some money away for your retirement. Reduce the marriage penalty. Start limiting the tax breaks for the top 1%. They are on their way to reaping $2 trillion. This is not the right way to go. So in particular, stop allowing things that are really income to be taxed at other rates. If it's income, it needs to be taxed as income. It's an important reform. But the big thing, the Wall Street sales tax is now out there with Van Hollen and Pelosi for it. After 2 years of agitation by the Tax Wall Street Party, we've got this on the scoreboard. So I also would point out I tried to convince Anthony Brown, Democratic candidate for mayor, for governor of Maryland, who didn't make it, and Peter Franchot, the controller of Maryland, the tax guy, tried to convince both of them. Didn't come out in the election last year, but now it's out there. They call it an action plan to transfer wealth from Wall Street traders to the heart of the middle class. Well, that's one way to put it. So this is the proposal. And the other thing we're interested in promoting, Petraeus must be indicted. Petraeus divulged top-level state secrets to his paramour, this Mata Hari operative, Paula Broadwell. This is unacceptable. The law has got to be the same for everybody, whether you're a general and the head of the CIA or whoever you are. I would ask these people, you're talking about prosecutions against whistleblowers? How about starting with a prosecution of somebody at the very top who ought to be providing an example, right? These other guys in the past, Deutsch and Sandy Berger, they've all been gotten penalties for taking documents and such stuff. Well, in this case, it's much worse when it's the head of the CIA giving these documents. And, of course, if you want to get to the bottom of Benghazi, go up the CIA chain of command, and who will you find at the top in September 2012? Well, you're going to find it was Petraeus. So on these people, the growth of the momentum of the Wall Street sales tax, it's there. Grab a hold of it with both hands and your teeth and start pushing that down the throats of those reactionary Republicans. Let them tell us why they want to cut Social Security disability by 20% and they refuse to tax Wall Street income. We're going to tax Wall Street turnover. See you next week on World Crisis Radio.